Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of November 1st, 2020. First, the weekly reports from the local public health departments. From the Ford County Health Department dated November 5th, there have been a total of 325 cases in Ford County. That is an increase of 65 from our last reading. There have been 15 deaths, which is an increase of 3 from our last reading. A total of 8,265 tests have been administered. The breakdown of cases, female 58%, male 42%. From Iroquois County, there have been a total of 736 cases, which is an increase of 165 from last week's. 653 of those are confirmed cases. 883 are probable cases. 514 have been released from their quarantine. 191 are currently in home isolation. 11 have been hospitalized, and 20 have died. And that number is the same as last week. 55.6% of the cases have been female. 44.4% have been male. Total test results in Iroquois County, 15,694. Negative results, 14,958. Laboratory confirmed positive results, 653. Probable positive results, 83%. The positivity rate is 4.1%. Now we'll turn to the Ford County Chronicle. Our first story is entitled, Gilman Resident Arrested on Charges of Sexual Assault of Child and Abuse. Gilman. On Friday, October 30th, the Iroquois County Sheriff's Department arrested Edward W. Dill, age 76, of Gilman, on charges of predatory criminal sexual assault of a child and aggravated criminal sexual abuse following an investigation into allegations involving two juvenile victims. Dill was taken into custody Friday afternoon with incident and transported to the Iroquois County Jail, where he remains awaiting a court appearance. From the PBL School Department, PBL to hold hearing on e-learning plan. Paxson. The Paxson-Buckley-Lota School District placed a notice on its website last week announcing a public hearing would be held on a proposed e-learning program that would be utilized if schools are closed due to an unplanned emergency event. Upon approval by the school board, the e-learning plan would be for a term of 3 years. E-learning days would not exceed 5 days in any calendar year. The hearing was scheduled for 6 p.m. November 12th in the Little Assembly Room at PBL High School at 700 West Orland Street in Paxson. In an October 28th letter to family and staff, PBL Superintendent Cliff McClure said under guidance from the Illinois State Board of Education, school districts in Illinois have been highly encouraged to immediately develop a plan for e-learning. The purpose in doing this is to ensure a continuation of learning if there is a school closure due to inclement weather, McClure said. PBL currently has authorization to implement remote learning days in case of emergency school closures due to the COVID-19 pandemic. PBL e-learning days will occur if school is called for an unplanned emergency event, such as extreme cold, inclement weather, power outage, etc., to cancel school with a maximum of 5 days, McClure said in the letter. As with remote learning days, when an e-learning day occurs, all students will be provided with opportunities to continue learning in all subject areas, either via electric media or through pre-planned learning opportunities. The type of lessons and delivery will vary greatly with the variations of subjects and age levels we serve. The learning opportunities will be accompanied by feedback from staff. Some of the feedback will be immediate, while other feedback will be provided upon return to school. No student will be left out or penalized for circumstances out of their control. It is our intention to give this our best effort to implement this effectively. Keeping students engaged in learning, especially in times of uncertainty, is of critical importance. We will do our best to take steps to work with all our staff and communities to ensure continuity of education. McClure said parents' questions about the e-learning plan can be directed to their children's school principal. Now in business news, some restaurants in Ford County defying state order. Gibson City. In defiance of a state order, some restaurants in Ford County continue to offer indoor dining, including burgers and beer, in Gibson City. The regional restaurant bar chain posted a message on its Facebook page this week stating that its establishments in Gibson City, Kankakee, Fairbury, and South Wellington are open for inside dining. The store manager at Burger and Beer's location in Gibson City confirmed to the Ford County Chronicle on Tuesday that it was open for indoor dining. "It was our owner's decision," said store manager Brian Brucker. "I just don't think they really agree with the restrictions imposed." Brucker said the Gibson City location had been pretty busy with indoor service since Monday, when a temporary ban on indoor dining went into effect in the region as a result of its increasing COVID-19 positivity rate. Meanwhile, Lena Sample, administrator of the Ford County Public Health Department, did not respond to messages seeking comment Tuesday about whether her agency would be enforcing the ban locally. All 11 of the state's mitigation regions faced stricter COVID-19-based restrictions by Wednesday due to increasing positivity rates. The positivity rate for Region 6 in East Central Illinois, which includes Ford County, was 9.5% as of this week, more than 2% higher than it was on October 20th. Under restrictions that went into effect in Region 6 on Monday through an executive order from Governor J.B. Pritzker's administration, restaurants and bars are allowed only to serve food outdoors and through carryout and delivery until the order is lifted. However, opposition has been growing from some bars, restaurants, and other small businesses. Brucker said many businesses, burgers and beer included, are particularly frustrated that the state never even notified them of the restriction. "They never officially sent us anything," Brucker said. "We never got anything in the mail. We got nothing from the state. So it's like you have to find out through the news. They don't ever tell you anything. As far as the health department or anything like that goes, it's like very unofficial the way they did all of it, and I don't think it's handled very well." Last week, the Illinois Restaurant Association called on Pritzker to consider alternative mitigations to reduce the hardship that many restaurants are already experiencing. The organization also said it plans to file a legal brief in support of pending lawsuits from restaurants challenging the administration's executive orders. A group of more than a dozen restaurants in Springfield also filed a similar lawsuit against Pritzker on Friday. The new restrictions have also received pushback from some local leaders, including Orland Park Mayor Ken Pacow, who have said they would not enforce them. "All we're asking is for simple enforcement," Pritzker said during his daily press briefing Monday in response to a question about pushback for the new restrictions. "Many, many restaurants and bars are doing the right thing. They're either using outdoor tents or they're just providing pickup and delivery service or drive-through during this difficult period." But the governor also said some officials are choosing not to do the right thing. "I would encourage people to speak to their local leaders and remind them that their leadership means making difficult decisions," Pritzker said. Pritzker also touted the number of local businesses that have benefited from federal stimulus funding released by the state, the Business Interruption Grants Program, and the Local Coronavirus Urgent Remediation Emergency, or Local Cure, Support Program. "Until we can reduce the upward movement of hospitalizations and bring the rate of spread down, we must keep our economy moving forward and support our small businesses," Pritzker said during his briefing. "And I encourage everyone listening to support your local small businesses. These are the heroes who are the lifeblood of our communities, and they are job creators." The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity has distributed $95 million in big funds to businesses through 4,000 individual grants, and there remains $175 million in the program to disperse, according to the governor's office. Nearly $50 million has also been distributed from the CURE program, which reimburses local governments for COVID-related expenses. About $31.9 million in CURE funding is in the process of being distributed, with $170 million remaining. Both the BIG grants and the local cure funding comes from the Federal Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act. Tanya Hernandez, a business owner who has benefited from the BIG funds, spoke at Pritzker's daily press briefing about how the grant money helped keep her dress shop from failing due to the ongoing pandemic as her business pivoted to making masks instead. The BIG grant that was provided by the state was essential for us. It allowed us to keep our employees and pay rent. Without this financial help, it was impossible for us to survive. We're facing critical issues, but the BIG grant has been a lift for us, Hernandez said. Still, Pritzker said, more is needed in the way of to aid struggling businesses. The dollars provided by the federal government aren't nearly enough, Pritzker said. So I've simultaneously called for the federal government to deliver more direct assistance for Americans in every state. I would encourage elected officials across the state to join on that advocacy. According to the governor, the past week was one of the worst single-week increases in regional positivity rates across the state since the spring, with none of the regions experiencing a decrease in their positivity rates. The lowest increase in any region was by 1.1 percentage point, which was in Region 5 in southern Illinois, and the highest was a 3.1 percentage increase in Region 7, which includes Will and Kankakee counties. The state's rolling 7-day average in positivity rate reached 8.1%, which is the highest level since May 28. Monday's one-day positivity rate of 9.1% was the highest recorded since June 2nd. Now from Buckley. ERH to fix water main on Central Street in Buckley. Buckley. Village trustees learned at their monthly meeting Monday that ERH Enterprises Incorporated would start fixing a water main leak on West Central Street for the following day. It was brought to their attention that there was a problem with well number 6. ERH Enterprises, a Westfield-based company contracted to maintain Buckley's water system, indicated it would look into the problem. Meanwhile, Village Board President Sherry Satura said she had spoke with Village Engineer Larry Johnson regarding the availability of grants to help fund sewer repairs or replacement. Johnson said he was aware of a $10,000 grant that is available, but the cost to apply could be between $4,000 and $5,000. Johnson said it is a very competitive grant, so there is only like a 10% chance that you would get it. Trustees decided against pursuing the grant. Also at Monday's Village Board meeting, Village maintenance employee Dennis Miller said he had done some mowing and had started to vacuum leaves deposited on the edge of residents' properties. The board asked residents to stop mixing in trash with their leaves to be picked up by village workers. Miller said a local contractor had left an open hole during fixing a drainage problem, so Miller would cover the hole with a piece of plywood. Trustee Shane Stachura said he would contact the contractor and ask him to finish the job. If not finished, the village will contract with someone else to finish the job and fill in the hole. Miller said he installed new snow route signs and removed some 15-minute parking signs that were faded to the point they were difficult to read. Board president asked that the 15-minute parking signs be put back up so that people do not park in those areas overnight. Miller said there are cars that park there during the day for a couple of hours at a time. Trustees voted unanimously to authorize the state to install handicap-accessible ramps at 9 locations along Railroad Avenue when that road is resurfaced in March 2021. The estimated cost of the village will be around $9,315. This cost can come out of the village's motor fuel tax fund. The road resurfacing project is already approved by the state, so the village will not need to pay additional engineering for the ramps to be put in. The board president said she has talked with the village auditor, Stan Feller, who said that due to rising costs of water repairs and other costs, the board should consider leaving its base water rate unchanged, but start counting gallons from 1, not 2,000 gallons. Trustees made plans to discuss the matter at their December meeting. Trustee Peggy Shockley commended Treasurer Julie Schultz on how neat and informative her monthly treasurer's report was. The board president said the cost to put a new water main along First Street would be $37,000. The board is considering options. And village clerk Jim Biggs distributed to board members the scheduled petition filing for the April 2021 election. There are three positions up for election, as well as the positions of village president and clerk. Now we have a story from the Ford County Record. Ford Ridgewind, Sibley agree on pavement and turbine placement. On October 27th, the Village of Sibley Board of Trustees voted 4-1 to approve a community benefit agreement with Ford Ridgewind. Within this agreement, Ford Ridgewind commits to the use of radar-activated aircraft detection lighting systems, ADLS, which allows the red safety lights to be off at night except for when aircraft enters the project. Additionally, the agreement removes two turbines located closest to the village boundary and provides financial compensation for the village at a rate of $85,000 per year for the life of the project. $85,000 in new additional funds per year for our village will be a great benefit to every resident of Sibley. But we saw that money wouldn't be enough to try and reach consensus among our citizens, Village President Jim Kearney said. We are grateful to Apex that they are willing to go the extra mile by moving out the distance of turbines from the village boundary and installing lights in the tower that only light up when an aircraft is detected. Technology was important to members of our community, and I'm glad we were able to come to an agreement with Ford Ridgewind. Marge Vetter of Sibley attended several of the informational meetings and is a participant in the project. This agreement is great news for all in our community. The project will benefit not just the residents of Sibley, but also improve the school district, fire districts, and township roads. We are so glad they continue to be transparent and flexible when it comes to working with the community. Over the last several weeks, our team has held meetings and open houses with residents in Sibley, said Aaron Baker, Senior Development Management with Apex Clean Energy. Hearing the feedback on the project allowed us to make it better and stronger. It seems like the project is now viewed as a win for both participants and non-participants in the community. Baker continued, the ADLS lighting system was one of the main requests, and I'm glad we are able to include this once the FAA approves its use at the project. Ford Ridgewind is currently in negotiations with a corporate off-taker and, if building permit applications are approved by the county, would begin construction in early 2021. Also in the record, Federated Church of Paxton welcomes new minister. The Federated Church of Paxton welcomes a new minister, the Reverend Steve Anderson. He has over 41 years of ministry experience in a variety of settings. His pastoral goal is to help people deepen their relationship with God through faith in Jesus. Church service is at 10 a.m. on Sundays, meeting in the church, or you can check out their website, www.paxtonfederated.com, where you can view the service every week. Now we'll turn to the obituaries of Ford County for the week of November 1st, 2020. Robert D. Reap. Robert D. Reap, 69, of Rochester, passed away on Friday, October 23, 2020, at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. Cremation was accorded, and private family services will be held. Memorial donations may be made to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Foundation in Springfield. Harlene May Dargan. Harlene May Dargan, 84, formerly of Paxton, was welcomed into the Kingdom of Heaven on Saturday, October 24, 2020. She was a resident of the Dolphin House in Burlington, Wisconsin. Graveside services were held at the Green Mound Cemetery in Quincy on October 31st. Willowdeen E. Peters. Willowdeen E. Peters, 92, of Paxton, passed away at 5 a.m. Thursday, October 29th, at her home. Funeral services were held on Tuesday, November 30th at the Bayer Family Funeral Services with the Reverend John Houck officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery in Paxton. memorials may be made to the family or to a charity of the donor's choice. Verda O. Dipple. Verda O. Dipple, 93, of Buckley, died at 1:25 a.m., Sunday, November 1, 2020, at Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth. Private funeral services will be held at St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial will follow in St. John's Cemetery in Buckley. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran School or Christ Lutheran High School. Gerald Richard Potter. Gerald Richard Jerry Potter, 76, of Buckley, formerly of Paxton, passed away 7:29 a.m., Monday, November 2nd, at his home. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Leela Sennert. Leela Sennert, 89, of Paxton, passed away on Thursday, October 22, 2020, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. Graveside services were held on Saturday, October 24th, at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to ARC of Iroquois County. Stephen J. Seamson. That is spelled S-I-E-M-S-E-N. Stephen J. Seamson, 73, of Fort Myers, Florida, and Champaign, Illinois, and formerly of Gibson City, peacefully passed away at 9:03 p.m. Monday, October 26, 2020, at his home in Champaign, with his family at his side. His funeral services were held on November 1st at the Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with Deacon Paul Saratakis officiating. Memorial contributions may be made to the Community Pregnancy Clinic of Naples, Florida, or to Bishop McNamara High School, Kankakee, Illinois. Larry K. Butch Johnson. Larry K. Butch Johnson, 73, of Gibson City, formerly of Foosland, peacefully passed away at 11:24 a.m., Wednesday, October 28, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A private family graveside service will be held at Mount Hope Cemetery in Foosland. Memorial contributions may be made to the donor's favorite local veteran association. William Lee Bill Sanders. William Lee Bill Sanders passed away peacefully at home in DeKalb on October 21st, 2020. Funeral services were held Tuesday, October 27th in Cisna Park, and burial followed in the Cisna Park Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Unity Hospice of Western Illinois or Cisna Park Boosters. Joseph F. Bullington. Joseph F. Bullington, 82, of Sheldon, passed away on Wednesday, October 21st, 2020, at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. Funeral services were held at Monday, October 26, 2020, at Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Reverend Justin Huber officiated. Burial followed at Sheldon Cemetery in Sheldon. Graveside military rites were performed by the Watsika American Legion Post 23 and Iroquois County VFW Post 7450. Memorials may be made to the Watsika American Post Legion Post 23, the Sheldon Public Library, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Dorothy E. Rice. Dorothy E. Rice, 94, of Piper City, passed away on Thursday, October 22, 2020, at Bickford of Bloomington in Bloomington, Illinois. A private memorial mass will take place at St. Peter Catholic Church in Piper City, with the Father Carl Lopresti officiating. Graveside interment will take place at Calvary Cemetery in Piper City. Memorials may be made to Cook Memorial Library or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Paul A. Yonka. Paul A. Yonka, 76, of Kankakee, died after a short illness on Monday, October 26, 2020, at Riverside Medical Center. A private family service was held on Saturday, October 31st. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Kankakee School District Fine Arts. Julia A. Fairley. Julia A. Fairley, 82, of Gilman, passed away on Thursday, October 29th, 2020, at Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. Burial will take place at Melbourne Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. Donald Lee Green. Donald Lee Greeny Green, 60, of Kenton, passed away on Thursday, October 29, 2020, at Franciscan Health, Lafayette East, in Lafayette, Indiana. A celebration of life will take place from 1 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, November 14, 2020, at his daughter Brooke's house at 905 East 3rd Street in Fowler, Indiana. An after-party will follow starting at 6 p.m. at The Local in Fowler. Don would want everyone to have a good time. Memorials may be made to the family's wishes. Constance Pauline Schmidt. Constance Pauline Schmidt, 92, of Gilman, passed away on Friday, October 30, 2020, at her residence. Funeral services were held at the Gilman Cemetery on Tuesday, November 3, 2020, with Vicki Killius officiating. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Memorial Hospice, the Gilman Fire Department, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Lorraine E. Adams. Lorraine E. Adams, 93, of Danforth, passed away on Saturday, October 31, 2020, at Piper City Rehab and Living Center. Private graveside services will be held at Danforth Cemetery. Arthur W. Yergler. Arthur W. Yergler, 84, of Addison, passed away on Tuesday, November 3, 2020, at Amita Hospice in Elk Grove Village. Private funeral services will be held at the Christian Bible Church in Cisna Park on Monday, November 9, 2020. Burial will follow at the Cisna Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Compass Church in Wheaton or the Christian Bible Church in Cisna Park. And we return to the news with a story entitled, Paxton Police Arrest Driver for Cocaine and Cannabis Possession. Casey J. McCartney, 33, of St. Joseph, was arrested for possession of a controlled substance and illegal possession of adult-use cannabis and was also ticketed for speeding during a traffic stop at 8:03 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th, at the intersection of Pell Street and Stockholm Road on Paxton's East Edge. The traffic stop was conducted after a Paxton police officer patrolling the area allegedly saw McCartney driving a 2010 Dodge Avenger at 46 miles per hour in a 30 mile per hour speed zone. Upon approaching the vehicle, the officer noticed strong odor of raw cannabis coming from the vehicle. When the officer asked her about the odor, she showed him a box containing 2.8 grams of loose cannabis. A subsequent search of the vehicle revealed the presence of a bag containing 0.4 of a gram of cocaine inside the center console and an additional 9.8 grams of cannabis inside the glove box. The vehicle was seized by police under city ordinance. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.